You're listening to Beyond 1894, a podcast dedicated to updating you on research, innovation, and campus life happening at Louisiana Tech University.
Hey y'all, this is Tanya Oakes-Smith with the University of Communications at Louisiana Tech University, and this is our podcast, Beyond 1894. I am here today with Dr. Laura Bostic, who is an assistant professor and associate director of our You Teach Tech program. It's a teacher preparation program where STEM majors can get two careers with one degree. And we're going to start off by talking to Dr. Bostic about exactly what is You Teach Tech.
So the country is severely lacking in STEM teachers, and it has been for years and years. And about 20 years ago, You Teach Austin came up with a program to get more STEM teachers, and their idea was, you know, who's going to want to teach STEM? Well, how about STEM majors? Because they already have an interest in STEM, clearly, and are good at it. So what if we could get STEM majors to also get certified to teach? So they came up with a program, and then they started sharing that model across the country. And now around 41 different universities have that model. So Louisiana Tech no longer has a major in secondary math or biology or chemistry or physics. We just have the You Teach Tech program. So STEM majors take our classes, our education classes, and then when they graduate, they have both their STEM degree and are certified to teach, so they can go into grad school, they can go into industry, or they can go straight into teaching.
Now, STEM stands for science,
technology, engineering, and mathematics.
Okay. And why would, and this may sound like a really simple question, but why would someone choose to teach STEM subjects?
Well, a lot of STEM majors don't know that they want to. And so we start out with two 1-hour classes as our beginning and just say, try teaching. And a lot of them, when they come over and try, they decide that they like it. We get into classrooms in the very first class. So you get field experience from the very beginning because we want you to be working with kids and decide whether that's something you like. And there's just also some people who they're great at math and they're great at science, but they're also more people persons. And so the idea of being in a lab somewhere or crunching numbers, you know, isn't really what they want to do. They want to use their talent, but they want to be interacting with people more. And that's a great job for them. And I also tell them, you know, you may work in industry for a while and then decide later you want to teach. Some people, when they have children, decide that they want that same schedule, you know, where they can pick their kids up from school and have summers off. So there's a lot of reasons, and I just try to express that there's not many reasons not to do it. You know, it gives you more options.
So you mentioned changing careers midstream. Tell us about your former career, because you weren't always in higher education or a professor.
No, I was a STEM major who never considered teaching. So I got my biomedical engineering degree from Texas A&M and then immediately went to work at Johnson Space Center in Houston. And I was a biomedical engineer at NASA for almost 18 years. And I had no teaching experience when I did that. I started out working in mission control for shuttle flights. The biomedical engineers were they call the backroom support for the flight surgeons in the mission control center. And then I moved over to a group that built medical and life sciences experimental hardware for the shuttle, and then later the Russian space station Mir and the International Space Station. And I did that for quite a while and then moved to another group that worked with spacewalks, basically.
So you were in biomedical engineering pretty much from the get-go.
Yes, yes.
Because it's a field that's not very old, I mean, in the big scheme of things.
No,
right?
No. And in fact, people ask me how I got a job at NASA, and I have to admit that it was because it was my only offer. So I thought that I'd be working for a medical device company. That's kind of what I had in my mind that a biomedical engineer did, and I got a couple of interviews on campus, and then NASA was my offer, and I wasn't sad about it, but it certainly wasn't anything that I thought I would be doing. And so, yeah.
Well, that's amazing, because Louisiana Tech has so many ties to NASA, and we keep finding more, and this is one of the ones that's just really interesting to me. But something happened in your life that caused your path to change,
right?
And so tell me about that a little bit.
So I guess I'd been at NASA for maybe 11 or 12 years, and my daughter was born, and she was born completely blind. And so I started early on learning about that, because at 2 months old, she started their Early Steps program. And by the time she was 3 months old, she had therapists coming to the house. You know, she had an occupational therapist, and she had a physical therapist, and she had a vision teacher, and she had what they call an orientation and mobility specialist that later would teach cane travel. And so I was just kind of inundated with all these things that she was going to need that I didn't know anything about. And then when a child turns three, they start in the school district, and the school district takes over their care. And so I realized how much I didn't know. And so I did what I do, and that's start investigating. So, I was probably on, the computer, 2 hours after I found out she was blind, and I'm Googling everything, and what do I do, and how does she learn to do this? And I had never met a blind person. Lindsay was the first blind person I ever met. So I had no idea, does she have to go to a school for the blind, or will she be able to go to, a public school? And so anyway, I just started investigating all these things and got involved with some groups of blind people and parents of blind children. And my employer at the time would pay for any master's degree that you wanted. And so that seemed like the perfect opportunity for me to get a master's in special education. So I got my master's in special education, and actually right before I was about to graduate was the time that the space shuttle program was discontinued. And so in after a while, I was laid off. And so now I was kind of stuck with this dilemma where I'd been working in aerospace for 18 years, and aerospace wasn't hiring. They were letting go. And I had a special education master's, but I didn't have any experience teaching. And so I really didn't know what I was going to do. And I went to a conference that summer of the National Federation of the Blind, and I met Dr. Ruby Riles, who started the O&M program, the Orientation and Mobility program here at Louisiana Tech. And at the time, she was teaching teachers of blind students, and she was looking to retire in a few years. And so she asked me if I'd like to come out and see Tech and see the Institute on Blindness. And so that same summer I did that, and they offered me a job to come out and work with her and get my certification to teach blind students and get my doctorate. And so I ended up at Louisiana Tech.
Wow. Everything happens for a reason, right?
It does.
So tell me, you really have to become an advocate when you have a child who has special needs, right?
Yes.
And that seems like it drove you into a different... Start.
We'll start over with that one.
Yeah.
Yay, new question. So you really have to become an advocate for a child with special needs to ensure that the IEPs are done correctly, to ensure that they get every accommodation that they need in order to be successful, right?
Right.
And so that has driven you into a career with the PDRIB, which stands for?
The Professional Development and Research Institute on Blindness. Okay. Right.
So that's what started you at Louisiana Tech, am I
yes.
right about that? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
And so how did the affiliation with that part of Tech become You Teach Tech?
So, yeah, that was another kind of leap. So I worked at PDRIB for 5 years, and I finished my doctorate and got my certification to teach blind students. And then there was an opening in curriculum instruction and leadership for a special education teacher, instructor. And it seemed like a good move to me for really the main reason that I wanted to get kind of my message out to more students. So PDRIB does a fantastic job of training both teachers of blind students, rehabilitation specialists, and cane travel teachers, O&M specialists. But our classes are pretty small, so we'd have maybe 9 or 10 students in a class, and I thought that I wanted to move to where I was reaching every teacher who was going through teacher preparation. A lot of the people who come to Louisiana Tech already have a really good attitude about blindness. That's why they know about Louisiana Tech and come to Louisiana Tech. I think that PDRIB is special in the way they train their students because they have, the director of the center is blind, works with Louisiana Center for the Blind, which is in Ruston. And so they get all kinds of blind mentors and role models, and they see what adults who are blind can do. Whereas in a lot of other universities, they have a real heart for the job, but maybe they don't even know blind adults who are employed and successful and live on their own and have kids. And so I think you have to see what's possible to have those expectations. And I kind of wanted to be able to share that with a wider audience. So I moved over to curriculum instruction and leadership, and was a visiting assistant professor for a year. And at the end of that year, the dean of our college, Don Schillinger, came to talk to me about You Teach Tech because he wanted somebody on the program who had a STEM background, but then also had the teaching piece of it. And so it just seemed like this amazing fit for me, and he wanted me to still teach one class a quarter, and so I got to keep a special education class. And so it's like he just hit everything I was really interested and passionate about. I got to do in this job, so that's how that started, and that was in 2017.
Now, you talked about the university, Louisiana Tech University, having an affinity for the institute. They've been here. They've grown together.
Yes.
One of the opportunities that we had last year was the event at the football game. Tell me about the event at the football game that we had.
Right. So one thing that people don't think about in teaching blind children is how much people get from sight. Right. People who are sighted depend on sight just a lot, almost to the degree that they don't use their other senses because they don't have to. And when you're teaching blind children, especially if they were born blind, if it's a congenital condition, they have no reference point for so many things, like colors, for instance, or sizes, like how big is a lion? You know, you read in books about lions, and maybe somebody hands you a stuffed lion, you know, a child, and says, this is a lion. Okay, well, what they're telling that child is that a lion is, you know, about the size of a puppy, and it's fuzzy, and, you know, it has no distinguishable smell, and it doesn't have sharp claws, you know. So they're thinking that they're giving them this concept, but it's not an accurate concept. So anytime a student can touch the real thing or experience the real thing, then they get a better concept. And so we started talking with athletics about, hey, is there a way that we could get a group of blind students to come out to the football field and just feel a football, you know, feel the pads that football players wear and the helmet, and walk the length of a field. So when somebody says, you know, they made the first down, or they, you know, they ran 12 yards, they have a concept of what that is. So we came out here, and athletics was wonderful. They set up all kinds of people. They had one of the trainers who would let them use some of the equipment. They had the some of the guys who work with equipment letting them touch everything and put on helmets and explaining, you know, why they wore the things they did. They had somebody who worked with them, like kind of the physical therapy part, you know, let them feel the ice bath and let them feel the massage table and get on and, you know, feel what a little massage was like. It was cute. Everybody, you know, walked the length of the field, and then we were telling them about the field goal, you know, the poles, and they wanted to see how high it was. So you had all these little kids with their canes stuck straight up in the air trying to, you know, touching, you know, to see how high it was. And then a group of them wanted to walk the stands. So they wanted to walk from the bottom to the very top of the stands to see how big that was. And it was just so fun, and they learned so much. And then they were just kids. Then they were like rolling down hills, you know, and running and acting like they were catching balls. And it's funny because some of the adults that came to help out were blind, and they said, I didn't know this. I didn't know what this felt like, you know, or how big this was and that kind of thing. So it was a great experience. We called it the Touchdown Touch Tour.
I think that may have been the first time I met you face to face in a meeting.
I think so. Yep.
Was talking about how we managed this and how we made it an experience for both the students who were going to participate in it, but also the adults or the people in the athletics department who helped facilitate the event. And I know that it changed minds and beliefs for some of those people too. And I think that that's one of the strengths that we have.
Yes, you know. Yeah. And if anyone from athletics is listening, we're ready to do basketball or baseball. So.
Well, we talked about your affinity for STEM education, and you've recently received a new title.
I got an endowed professorship.
Okay.
So I was thrilled that the Waldrop family wanted to have an endowed professorship in STEM education. And so when we started thinking about, you know, what might I want to do with endowed professor funds, I immediately started thinking about the STEM part, the STEM education, because just like I try to use my special education classes to kind of spread a belief and an attitude about disability and expectations to students in teacher prep, I also want teachers who are going to be STEM teachers to understand what they can do to help students in their class, because STEM is one subject or several subjects, actually, that it's difficult for teachers to know how to teach that to somebody who's blind or has limited mobility. You know, when you think of your standard chemistry lab, you know, all the things you do, you know, with test tubes and titrations and, you know, weights and measures and all these kinds of things, it's hard for them to know what can happen. But I, through my affiliation with blindness groups, had met Dr. Kerry Cipollo, and he had started a company called Independent Science. And Kerry himself is blind and is a PhD chemist. And so he started a company to make accessible hardware for STEM. So basically they use just the same hardware that anyone would use, the LabQuest, but they make it talk. So they have, you know, if you get this equipment, then you can get all the different sensors, you know, the temperature sensor, the voltage sensor, the drop counter, you know, all these things that speak. So the blind student or the student who can't write or the student who, you know, has limited mobility doesn't have to depend on somebody else to always tell them what's happening. They can be an active participant. And so that was kind of my first thought of, okay, if I could get some of that hardware and expose our UTeach students to it, then they're going to have an idea of what's possible. Like, I don't expect them to be the experts on it. You know, there are special ed teachers who are going to be helping, but I want them to just go into a class thinking there are ways to adapt, you know, everything. And I started looking through some of the catalogs about the biology equipment they have and coding equipment they have that's accessible. And so I could basically, you know, spend thousands of dollars every year and keep adding to this. And then I think if I could possibly come up with a kind of maybe modules or curriculum that kind of incorporates it, then maybe it's something that could be used in all UTeach programs, and then maybe in all teacher preparation programs, and just get the point across that, you know, that students with disabilities can do STEM, and they're underrepresented, just like women are underrepresented in STEM, and minority groups are underrepresented in STEM. So, you know, I think of it the same way, that we have to find ways to make STEM more diverse, and this is one of them.
Well, one of the things that we've talked a lot about is creating opportunities for accessibility in every area of the world, not just in classrooms. But it becomes important because the concept of accessibility is not to dumb things down, for lack of a better way to put it.
Right.
But to make things work for all the people.
Right.
So help so the Americans with Disabilities Act it impacts every publicly funded school, correct?
Correct.
Can you explain to our listeners how that impacts how we provide accommodations for students?
Yeah, so with the American Disabilities Act, it basically is saying that all of the classes and programs need to be accessible. Now, so when you think about you know, every class on campus, you know, you're not going to have every teacher on campus who knows what needs to be done, but most universities have an Office of Disability Services, and through that, a student with a disability can register explain their accommodations, and the Disability Services Office works with them to get that. Now, in some cases, all they need is for, an alternate form of a textbook. So, for instance, a blind child will need, can't read a textbook, can't read handouts, but if they get the electronic file, they can play it, you know, they can have screen readers on their computer that can read it. They can have what they call a refreshable braille display that plugs into their computer where they can actually read it, you know, with their hands. Some students need extra time on tests or a quiet testing location, and disability services can provide that. If it's just extra time on a test, especially right now when we have a lot of remote teaching, you know, there's a way in our learning management system, Moodle, that you can just for a single student, you know, change the time allowed on a test. If they need a quiet test location, you know, it's different now that we're all at home. But when we come back, the testing services can provide that. So just depending on what they specifically need, they work with them to work with the professors and get them what they need so that everything is accessible to them.
So we've also talked about, because our Office of University Communications is charged with helping the university achieve accessibility online. With our social media, with our website. And this has become an important part of what our office does, is to explain how accessibility can benefit all of us.
Yeah. And that's something that I try to talk to the teachers I teach in my special ed classes and professors when I get the chance. I think some teachers think when they have students with disabilities in their class, which they will, because, you know, the IDEA is a law that specifies that children with disabilities should be taught in the least restrictive environment, which the first option for that is the regular classroom they would be in if they didn't have a disability. Now, not all children, that's going to be their least restrictive environment, but for a great majority, it is. So even teachers who think, you know, I don't want to be a special ed teacher, but they're going to have kids with disabilities in their class. And what I try to tell them is the things you do to help these students are going to help other students in your class. So for instance, I had a friend who had a child who had been in an algebra class and then moved to my daughter's algebra class in high school. And she went home from school that day and she said, "Oh my gosh, I love being in Lindsay's algebra class." And, you know, her mom said, "Well, you know, why? What's so great about it?" And she said, "The teacher says everything she's doing. So as she's writing on the board, she's saying these math terms that this student wasn't that familiar with." You know, if you think of, say, a fraction, and if when the teacher's writing on the board, she's saying, "Okay, so we have a 2 in the numerator, and then they draw the line, and we have a 6 in the denominator." You know, you're seeing it and you're hearing it. And not all students who have vision are visual learners, you know, and even students who are visual learners, we have found that the more ways you can express a concept, the easier it's going to be for them to get it. A lot of students with disabilities get manipulatives for things like math, and they really help sighted students who don't have, you know, a great concept. You know, if you have little pieces that you know, kind of like Legos that you can put together, and this is 1/4 and this is 2/4, and see how 2/4 is 1/2, you know, that it's in their hands, you know, it gives them this concept. And it's the same even in higher education. The more ways you can explain something, the more people who are going to get it.
So we talked a little bit about You Teach Tech, and last year y'all received a grant that provides an opportunity for students who are interested in becoming computer science educators.
Right. So we won a $1.2 million NSF Robert Noyce Scholarship Grant. And the area that that we wrote our proposal for is computer science education. everybody talks about how many jobs there are coming up in computer science fields, but in Louisiana, only 16% of high schools are teaching a computer science class. And one of the main reasons is because they don't have computer science teachers. And in You Teach Tech, any STEM major is eligible. And so computer science majors and cyber engineering majors have always been eligible, but we haven't had a lot of them try You Teach Tech. And so we really wanted a way to get them interested in the program. And so this scholarship provides for juniors and seniors $16,600 for up to 2 years, so they could get up to $33,200 to complete their STEM degree as planned, but then also take the You Teach Tech courses and be certified to teach. And then for every year of scholarship they receive, they would have a 2-year service obligation to teach in a high needs school district. So we're just really hoping that we're going to get more students in those areas trying You Teach Tech and hopefully deciding they love to teach and getting us more teachers in Louisiana who can teach computer science.
And going into areas where teachers are desperately needed too,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. We're looking at how some things can be done in rural areas, because there's so many rural areas. And so another thing that this grant is going to do for us is we're developing a computer science education graduate certificate, which would be available for STEM majors who aren't computer science or cyber engineering, who are interested in doing this. If they were willing to do the You Teach and this computer science education certificate, they would be eligible for the scholarship. But also for teachers who are teaching now, who want to get some skills in computer science education, because it's going to be an all online program. And so we really want to reach teachers just all over the state.
Well, that sounds, and it's wonderful when you come from a rural area to hear about presenting opportunities for great careers, yeah, to our students when they start out.
Right. It's, yeah, everybody wants to give their students the opportunities to get a good job, and I know that you know, it's hard for them to not be able to offer things, to not be able to get, you know, teachers to come, you know, to some of these areas. But if they themselves can get some training, you know, they'd love to help.
So you're busy, 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 sounds like.
Yes.
What else is there?
What else is there? Well, my daughter that I told you about is graduating high school this year, which is unbelievable. And so we're looking at where she's going to go to college and what she's going to major in. And clearly, since I'm an engineer and her father is an engineer, she has no interest in math or science. So I'm trying to speak her language, her liberal arts language, and help her with that. It's just getting ready, getting this scholarship program ready so that we can start awarding scholarships for fall. And so it sounds easy. It sounds like you get a bunch of money and you can pass it out. But, you know, there's we have to develop this, you know, these classes, and we have to develop the certificate. And so it's just a lot of upfront work working on that. And then I've recently been working on the marketing materials for that program, so we can get that out. It's a little hard sometimes because the You Teach Tech program is a joint program between the College of Education, the College of Engineering and Science, and the College of Applied and Natural Sciences. But it's housed in the College of Education. So we're housed in the place where we're not with our target population, right? Because we're trying to recruit STEM majors. And so we're trying to figure out ways to better reach those students, you know. And so we're doing posters, and we're, you know, going to have information sessions. And, you know, it's been a strange year, you know, for everybody, where students couldn't go into classes, you know, and try out teaching, you know, and so it's you know, we've had some numbers go down, and we're really looking at, hey, looks like this next fall we're going to get back to quote normal unquote, you know, I hope, and get our students back in classes, and how can we get a nice big group to start back up with that.
Well, we're hoping, and we will put the link to You Teach Tech in the show notes.
Perfect.
And we will put the link toward the Cyber Tech, or Cyber Teach, sorry, LA program.
Yes.
In the show notes as well. Thanks for joining us today, Laura. I've learned a lot, and I hope our listeners have learned a lot as well.
Thanks so much for having me.
Louisiana Tech University's You Teach Tech helps prepare the next generation of teachers to share their love of science, technology, engineering, and math, or STEM. You Teach Tech students receive a bachelor's degree in any STEM content area, including computer science, along with a You Teach Tech minor that can be applied to a teaching certification in secondary mathematics or science. Through You Teach Tech, STEM majors gain the knowledge, skills, and experience necessary to work either in industry or in the classroom. We train teachers. They change the world. Find out more at uteachtech.com. That's the letter U, teachtech.com. Thank you for listening to Beyond 1894. Please subscribe and rate us wherever you listen to podcasts. For more information about this episode, check out our show notes. Beyond 1894 is produced by Louisiana Tech University's Office of University Communications.